I read the last book in the Bible, the book of Revelation, last week. I don't recommend it. You need to have some pretty serious filters to strain out the blood and the militarism and the hierarchical God. Yet on the other hand, I could be wrong. Two of my spiritual heroes, Dan and Phil Berrigan, went to the book of Revelation regularly for sustenance. The Berrigan brothers, for those who forget the 60s and 70s, were Catholic religious, poets, and activists. Although they consistently challenged the gap between rich and poor, they're most remembered for their anti-war protests. Like the time they poured their own blood on draft files in Baltimore, or homemade napalm on the same in Maryland, or the time they entered a nuclear missile facility in Pennsylvania and began to hammer the nose cones into plowshares. They were throwing pebbles at Goliath. Both Dan and Phil spent considerable time in prison. Like the early Christian experience that shaped the book of Revelation, the Berrigans understood their faith to be in opposition to the macro myths and systems of their society. They saw America as an empire like Rome, thirsting for power and gold, willing to kill to get it, justifying itself by feeding the populace platitudes about peace and co-opting and domesticating religion. It was a harsh and pointed critique at a time when America was killing its own young in the jungles of Vietnam, to say nothing of what it was doing to the locals there. And at the same time, anesthetizing American religion with an apolitical, individualistic God. This critique was not dissimilar from that of St. John the Divine, who in his opposition to Rome created a book full of symbols and imagery to challenge the imperial idolatry of his day. It's from the book of Revelation that we hear repeatedly of the beast, the whore, Babylon, all references to Rome. We hear of Armageddon, white-robed martyrs, and the salvific blood of the Lamb. The context is a persecuted Christian minority exhorted to stand firm in their faith despite imprisonment and death, and being comforted with the thought of their God's eventual triumph. There is no doubt that today we as a church all too often fail to follow the lead of St. John and the Berrigans. The accepted myths about power, leadership, success, beauty, and money, and the political policies they give rise to often run counter to the wisdom of Jesus. Myths like the rich deserve their riches and the poor their poverty frequently provide the background mood music to our national social and fiscal policies. There is no doubt, too, that today the book of Revelation is an irrelevant, even dangerous relic, used most frequently by fundamentalist preachers peddling a religion of fear, predicting yet again the end of the world, and the need for individuals to repent and give the preachers their money. Yet rather than just discard the relic, We need to see the book as an encouragement to write our own poetry and prose, critiquing the folly and idols of our day, and encouraging Christians to stand up and speak up. There's one image I like in St. John's work, and it's that of the lamb. Now, put aside the blood stuff, you know, with its allusions to dead firstborn sons of Egyptians and an omnipotent deity who will only be satisfied with pure blood. Just put all that aside for a moment and think about a lamb. A lamb is young, lacking defenses, not exactly a leader or wise. Indeed, the lamb is an image of vulnerability. Contrast that with the empire's illusion to be invincible, independent, and omnipotent. If we take the image of lamb as a divine portrait seriously, then the whole power structure becomes inverted. God's no longer the one with the bigger muscle than Goliath, bigger muscle than Caesar, the supreme alpha male. God isn't even a shepherd. Indeed, one of the interesting things about Revelation, if you read it carefully, is that it doesn't picture God as anything. God, as in the Hebrew tradition, is too other, too beyond our constructs to be pictured. But it does point to a lamb, a Jesus who made himself vulnerable by costly self-giving love, and confronting the powers which destroy the justice and mutuality such love demands. It is, says Revelation, the Lamb that is worthy of worship. Now, the key question arising from the book of Revelation and from the story of David and Goliath is, what are you and I prepared to die for? Now, I know dying is an overrated concept, as is martyrdom. The best thing you can do if you love your family and friends is to live for them, not die for them. So let's care for ourselves and those we love. And when the Goliaths or the military turn up banging on our door with guns and batons and the like, then run like hell and hide. Keep living. That said, most martyrs I know of didn't choose to die and didn't want to. The choices were different than that. Think of Oscar Romero, a Catholic bishop of El Salvador, who was gunned down in 1980. He openly criticized the government and the military in their privileging the wealthy and powerful, while the majority of people lived in abject poverty. He spoke out against the terror tactics used. He spoke out, too, against the church where it was complicit. My point is that he didn't die because he wanted to, or because he believed in a doctrine like Trinity or atonement or incarnation. Rather, he died because by word and deed, Oscar held to the values known in the vulnerability of Jesus, values of justice, mutuality, and love. Then think too of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, a brilliant German Lutheran theologian, whose strong opposition to Hitler's euthanasia programs and the genocide against the Jews led to his involvement in a plot to assassinate the Führer. He was executed in 1945. Like Romero, Bonhoeffer lived a life of integrity critical of the church as well as the state, caring ultimately for the relationship between truth and justice, and dying because of the dissonance between them. My point is again that he didn't die because he wanted to, or because of some erudite beliefs or doctrine. Rather, he died because by word and deed, Dietrich held to the values known in the vulnerability of Jesus, values of justice, mutuality, and love. So the other day I was asked, Glenn, what would you go to the wall for? Wall being a metaphor for dying, I think. And my immediate response, both cheeky and serious, was for the right of a woman to wear a burqa on the streets of Paris. See, I think the justice and vulnerability of Jesus leads me to affirm and celebrate the diversity of religions and cultures on this planet, and not to presume that my religion or culture is superior and can be imposed on others. I think, too, that it leads me to affirm the right of every human being, without physically harming others, to make free and independent choices, even if I don't like those choices. And I think, too, that it leads me to question and challenge the structural political injustices that work against the poor, against most women, against most minorities. But I probably won't end up going to the wall, so to speak, for a burqa. I find I end up speaking out on lots of things. I'm never quite sure what people are going to find offensive. I hope in the future people might remember me as caring more about how we behave towards one another than what we believe. As caring that love is affirmed and celebrated whenever and wherever it manifests, rather than making rules and boundaries to control it. And caring for those excluded from the centers of power, rather than ingratiating myself to those who dwell there. Yet, you don't have much control over how people will remember you. Could be for something as minor as a joke on a billboard. Which reminds me, come to think of it, you know, that joke Jesus made about a camel and an eye of a needle? Maybe that set the whole ball rolling.